Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Brian.
Today,
I am everybody today.
Yeah, okay. Today is Friday, March the 1st. You may have detected a slight change in the broadcast. I guess is the simplest way. After what, 17 and 19 is 30. After 35, almost 36 years. Changing the jingle a little bit, the intro.
I had not noticed.
Yeah, well, that's because we were talking in such an engaging conversation beforehand. Mr. Sparks from the city of Eureka is alongside. Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Yes. Oh, that's right, potholes. That was the other thing we wanted to talk about.
I don't think
we
have any potholes.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll figure out what he's calling these voids of asphalt. But that's after our why do they say that? Dandelion. How did the dandelion get its name?
You know, you stump me on these like every month, and I do not know the answer.
All right. It comes from the jagged edges of its leaves, which were supposed to look like lion's teeth.
Hmm.
The French form of dent, D-E-N-T, D-D-E, L-I-O-N, lion, is tooth of the lion.
I think I will remember that.
I think I'll probably be looking at one later today. You know, teeth of the lion, huh? Fine.
I would have thought maybe more the lion's mane or something. Yeah, I don't.
Well, maybe you guys have a different kind of dandelion than what we have. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the roads. We've talked about them in the past. There's a little bit of cold patching that's been going on throughout the area in the last little bit. With the rains, certainly there's been an awful lot of new formations.
Yes.
All over town. In this kind of a situation, obviously the city can't do too much.
You know, you really can't. The asphalt plant isn't up and running. Sometimes they'll open at different times depending on projects or around in the region, because you really need a hot mix in order to do an effective pothole repair. The cold patch is, yeah, if you got some bad emergency, you can put it in there, but it doesn't tend to stay real well. They really need to be kind of squared off, hot mix put in, tamped down, that type of thing.
So to geek out a little bit for Eureka, Harrison and Booner.
Yeah.
Okay, for most folks, that's by the hospitals in the medical area of Eureka. On the Eureka side of Harrison.
Yeah, okay.
Again, another goofy thing. Harrison is split half. Yes. Is on the county, half is in the city, and it depends on where the dead animal is lying, whose agency responds.
And see, I'd be one to kind of kick it over to one side. But
I've seen shovels at work in the past. We'll just kind of leave that one there. Those potholes that were on the Eureka side at that intersection,
mm-hmm.
there are three or four of them. You know, I know you don't go that way at home each night, but I do.
Right.
Okay, they were filled. Was that cold patch or hot patch?
Well, it wouldn't have been hot patch because we don't have any hot mix.
So that's a symbol of the temporary, you know you're going to have to be back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, typically.
And that just is what it is, and the troops kind of have a map of where to go and continue to refill those.
Right, and you keep getting the new ones, particularly with all this wet weather, when you have some, you know, the kind of base problems we have and roads that have been continuing to deteriorate, it just gets worse, right?
So there are a number of new potholes, yet to be uncovered, potholes that have popped up in this last spate of wetness.
Mm-hmm.
Were those there before, or is the water undermined underneath, or is there something
you tend to see both. Sometimes you see the one that, gee, that road seemed perfectly fine the other day. There was no patches on it, and there you get some of that more like unraveling of a top layer. You see some of those, particularly on Booner and certainly a lot of other locations.
The heavy traffic.
Heavy traffic, yeah. And then the others are, it's the patch upon a patch, right? And that seems to be the weaker spot in the road. And so it's that patch that maybe gives way first and creates another pothole in the area.
So when you guys are driving around, I'm I know it's not just the roads. Yeah. It's everybody in the city is looking for this kind of stuff. And you see a new one. Do you report it in? Is that, does that go into it? Or do you just, yeah, okay, fine. How do you?
Lot down on those two, that block, we need to get down 14th and right. I mean, which.
Yeah, I mean, they're the main arteries are the well-known ones. But when a new one pops up, do you jump on it or do you let others do it? How do you determine which potholes get that attention?
Yeah, I think you try to make sure you get the ones that are certainly the more deeper, dangerous ones, even if it's a temporary type fix on it, and try and get onto the schedule so that when the asphalt plant does open, you get pretty, you know, try to be as aggressive as you can about getting back in and getting good fixes.
Does the city have liability with those? I mean, let's say Sparks Mobile drives through and it's a significant one, and you, and now the alignment's out, the wheel is snapped, depending on how high up your car is, maybe the fender is dinged.
Mm-hmm.
Is the city culpable in that, or is that driver responsibility, and yeah, you should have swerved across the lane when nobody was there and avoided it?
You know, I tell you, from I've seen claims for potholes over the years. They typically, from the insurance company, are denied. But there are certain cases where I have seen successful claims on cities.
Not to be confused with sinkholes or anything of that magnitude.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a different.
Yeah, there's a certain piece of, you know, driver responsibility, and then there's a certain piece of responsibility on the city to try to maintain the roads and. In some type of adequate condition, but I don't think I want to go too deep into liability.
No.
And
no, that opens doors, doesn't it?
It does.
KIDS News and Information Times 8:19.
We know you love Easy Radio, singing out loud, really out loud, to your favorite songs. But what about when you're traveling out of the area? Easy Radio can be heard throughout the area on 910 AM and 104.1 FM in Curry and Dilnort counties. And if you're in Humboldt County, 980 AM. That's Easy Radio, 910 AM in Brookings, 104.1 FM in Dilnort and Curry County, and 980 AM in Humboldt County. Good radio is easy.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Sparks. Greg, the concept with roads and things of that nature, when you're looking at or when the master plan is looked at and trying to figure things out, do you look at fill versus native cut? Fill is always going to be moving. I mean, it's always going to be moving.
Right.
You know there's going to be potholes.
Right.
You know you're going to have the cut in the pavements. You know that. But if it's in regular dirt that's been there for a while and it doesn't have rotting redwood trees underneath it and all that kind of stuff, you know, it's pretty stable and you're not going to have as much. Does it get to that level of nuance, like in our area, that it has such a huge percentage of fill?
You know, and I don't know enough about some of the long term on some of the roads, but, you know, in some cases, if even with fill, if it's been, you know, properly constructed in the first place, and too often that happens with roads over the years. I mean, some have been very well done. Others were more, you know, put in more cheaply, you know.
You just pushed in dirt into the gully, and pretty soon it was a trail, and then it got a little bit more gravel on it, and then it became a road.
I mean, yeah, and so you end up with, you know, and then you take our tree root problem we have on particular roads. You know, that's not something you deal with everywhere.
And not everybody has redwood trees that have shallow roots going out.
And particularly then on those shallow asphalt roads really buckles it up. So, you know, we have a number of challenges. We don't have the freeze-thaw cycle like having cities I worked in the Midwest, but But certainly the wet cycle, the tree root problem, all goes to, you know, create some significant road issues. And, you know, kind of that big picture piece, you know, we had the Measure I on the ballot this last fall, the quarter cent sales tax for roads. We ran it as a specific tax, meaning it takes a took a two-thirds approval. We got like 64.25%. So big percentage of the community.
A little bit more radio, buddy. A little bit more. You would have been there.
certainly was in agreement. That'll be something we'll be talking to City Council about, particularly as we come up with our strategic planning, whether or not we come back in 2020. And at the same time, in 2020, our five-year sunset on Measure Q, formerly Measure O, the half-cent that mostly primarily funds public safety, police and fire, is on the ballot. So how do you, you know, do you put these two together? You run them separate? You only run one? So those are some of the kind of strategic decisions the council need to be making.
Yeah, it's always interesting, some of that stuff, as it does play out. Overall, for the city of Eureka, with the rains that we had tail end of last week and early this week, how would you grade it? 10-point scale. How would you grade the impact to the city, with 10 being perfect?
Yeah.
And then the city staff response.
Well, I can tell you from the staff response first that we had crews that were just about 24 hours straight dealing with the drainage issues, sewer issues, some of the road closures because of that. They did just a great job of being out and being on it with obviously very rain-soaked ground and some pretty good rain events. I think we came through it very well in Eureka. I mean, we always are going to get some of those smaller localized flooding areas, but I haven't heard of any significant problems. So I don't know where to put a number on that, but it seemed to me we came out pretty well.
A couple of other things. Now we get into more of the rapid fire sections here. The tourism dollars.
Yes.
You know my bias, so I think everybody else does too. The TOT tax was initially put in for advertising, marketing, tourists. Period. Right. End of story. Over the years, Eureka and almost every other jurisdiction, I would suppose, has nibbled away. Now, sometimes it's small nibbles, and sometimes it's a meat cleaver.
Mm-hmm.
Portioning it off. Now you've got some dollars that had been allocated, the small percentage that was allocated, was being allocated towards outside marketing.
Right.
That's now in question. What's the thought behind that?
Well, the thought behind it is that, you know, we're putting that out to a competitive process. We're not cutting the amount of funds. But you're right in that TOT, if the idea initially that if it was all supposed to go towards marketing, that has not been the case. We get about $3 million are generated from the occupancy tax. We put $375,000. Is what has gone into the Visitors Bureau the last several years. And at one point, we were over 400,000. It was tied to a percentage. In addition, we fund 100, don't remember the number, exact numbers, a little over 100,000 to the Visitor Center in terms of, and Eureka Main Street also funded out of.
Was Main Street funded out?
Yes,
of that?
Out of TOT.
I thought Main Street had a business license surcharge in the district.
There's that, but there's in That's addition to that. Of, but in addition, there's okay. TOT. So, right, it's an important general fund revenue source that, but it certainly when you're in a community like Eureka where it's very important to get tourism, the destination tourists here. Our lodging community came out in strong support for going out for the request for proposals. They all spoke in favor of it. And they certainly recognize the importance of destination marketing.
It's got to be interesting with the folks that make the ultimate decision, not having any expertise or experience in that arena.
Right, and that's why we'll utilize a committee of people who do have experience in that arena to make recommendations.
It's 8:30.
Decade of Difference presents the High School Innovate Business Challenge.
I'm Genevieve Regley, encouraging you to go for it and submit an idea. I didn't know if my idea would be selected, but it was, and I learned a lot about my idea and myself. It was a great experience and helped kickstart my business while still attending Ferndale High School.
Learn more at decadeofdifference.org. Deadline to enter is February 15th. Upload your idea and compete for thousands of dollars. It's the Decade of Difference. Be a part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:36. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Greg Sparks, Eureka City Manager. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, along with Murphy's Markets. Greg, there have been a couple of things that we had in the news last week that were, I guess, head-scratchers. For me, it was like, what? Okay. So let's start with the non-recyclable glass bottle.
Yeah.
Okay. You guys have got, we've got, most everybody in Eureka has got the blue thing. I don't know what it's called technically, but, you know, for us, it's the recyclable blue container. Yeah, you know, it's got the two mouths on it, and you feed it, you know, whatever is recyclable, you put it in there, and off it goes.
Right.
Okay. All aluminum goes in. All bottles go in. All jars go in. All cardboard goes in. Yeah, maybe we make a mistake every once in a while and put a pizza box in there, and it shouldn't be, and okay, fine. Game, set, match. When I heard that there were going to be places around Eureka for people to drop off their non-recyclable bottles.
Yep.
What? Who was smoking what on this one?
Now, see, you missed some of the earlier conversation going back a few
Could
months.
Easily have.
So when...
I'm a macro guy, not a micro guy.
Yeah.
Here.
So when Recology was coming in this past with their new agreement... The recycling market has changed a lot in the last year or two. It used to be all like, particularly like plastics and a lot of things, it went to China.
Right, the barge in the bay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. China was taking, 70-some percent of the recycle market in the United States, and they have clamped down and said it has to meet this very high standard from contamination, which... So what's happening in a lot of places, plastic is just being bundled up and it's just being warehoused. Or in Oregon, there's some communities that have gotten authority to landfill the plastics because it's like you can't get rid of it. So one of the things we looked at from the overall weight in the waste stream, glass and contamination of glass is a big issue. A lot of times glass gets broken in the recyclables, so that tends to then make the other plastics and other recyclables in there less valuable if there's glass, broken glass waste in there. So as a means of both of trying to control...
But isn't that sorted out?
Fouls up sorting if the glass is broken and difficult to remove and that type of
thing. Okay, maybe more effort or a fancier machine.
So the idea was we could maybe help... keep the cost down a little bit if we came up instead of taking this glass and sending it somewhere else and the carbon footprint involved in that, if we could collect some of that glass locally, get it out of the waste stream, it could be crushed by Mercer Fraser and used as part of road base. So
I've read a couple articles saying that the rubber and that are kind of like mixed together somehow in a blendy thing. And
yeah, I think most even as part of that type of gravel base that goes down
in the process of the road.
So this just seemed like a good win-win to us that if we can put out the kind of education effort that people and it's not as convenient as just putting in your blue bin, but if you can save some of that up and drop it off at the sites that have been designated, that will help keep recycling costs down a little bit.
Does this work in any other community? I mean, this has got to be modeled off of somebody.
Hopefully. There's certainly some other that are crushing glass and using it for road base. We weren't the first ones to come up with that idea. But in order for recycling to be successful, And I've been, you know, I've worked in with recycling programs since, you know, the early 90s. It has to be really, really convenient for people. And you have to keep educating the public as well. There's a lot of just, contamination. You know, not washing out the refried bean cans that and the peanut butter containers. I mean, and so we
that's
kind of really
gross
need to do.
Not doing that because it smells then. You know, I mean, we rinse it. Angie's got me at least doing the rinsing part.
Okay.
Okay, I can.
You're scrubbing it down.
I get that part. I mean, that makes sense if you don't want the raccoons, you know, skunks tearing in. Okay, I got that part. But to think that I'm going to drive across town or even more than half a block away to and separate two kinds of glass?
You know, you start off with this like a sense as a pilot and find out, okay, is this working? Do we need more locations?
So this isn't a permanent.
We will always assess whether it's working and what needs to be done to improve it or if it just plain isn't working.
Now, with the franchise fees that go in, isn't there my mind is – isn't there already a recycling fee or some kind of charge associated with that to do the sorting out?
Right. There's
am I right
on
that?
We're trying to keep those costs down by if we can –
So that's a fluctuating figure? Yes, it's not as static?
Right. It's based on, our total cost is based on volume, weight and volume of the recyclables. So if we can get some of that weight out of the waste stream, use it locally, we think that makes sense.
So are you able to use existing staff, or is there additional staff
costs? Yeah, there's no additional staffing
costs. So it's just a flat number. It's
right.
Not
I think we're even looking to use some of our Eureka Uplift program, our kind of our homeless work program. We'll assist with that project.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
Hey, Humboldt County. The folks at Fly Humboldt want to say thank you for all your support. The Los Angeles flight is a great success. Did you hear? Starting May 29th, we'll have a second departure to Los Angeles. It makes it even easier to visit sunny SoCal. What's more, we'll have flights to Denver starting June 7th. You'll only be a few hours away from the Mile High City or wherever you want to go. This will make connecting to the world even easier. Get more information at flyhumboldt.org or email us at info@flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:45. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Greg Sparks. Greg, one quickie. Yeah. I know you got a couple of things you want to talk about.
Right.
The nonprofit entity that
is being
kicked around, is that the city?
Yes.
Having a nonprofit? I mean,
yeah.
It sounds like, you know, I mean, if I was a conspiracy fan, okay, we've just put in another veil, another separation, another something that isn't what it appears like. What is this thing about?
It's we've had the community access project CAPE. What's the E stand
Eureka?
For? Yeah. That's
Education?
Probably, yes. Eureka. For Eureka. We funded a lot of our homeless outreach type programs through
so social services kind of things?
It's, yeah, in a sense. And we raise all those as private dollars. It's no general fund subsidy into the CAPE program for a lot of our homeless youth outreach programs in particular.
So it's a tax status then? If Pabstein gives $10, it becomes a tax
and so,
write-off?
Right. So we decided to create a nonprofit in order to take in some of these funds. And the interesting thing, though, how we're using CAPE, I think, is the golf course. And that's probably what you saw in the
Now, that doesn't sound like homeless.
It isn't. But we, Course Co. has managed the golf course for many years, I think 30 years, something like that.
Yeah, those are the guys that got it from whatever the company that Les Wheeler was working with. Yeah.
And we chose not to continue with Course Co., basically kind of a cost issue. And in a sense, but we wanted to hire Course Co. people in to continue managing the golf course. Because we did the PERS early retirement incentives in 2018, that limits our ability then to add additional employees. We have to show a net reduction in employees when you use the CalPERS golden handshake. So we're actually hiring our golf course employees through our CAPE nonprofit. But since the golf course is going to be managed out of the community services department, Don Roller from Course Good, Don's continues in his similar role he had there. So we think it's going to be a pretty seamless transition for our golfers. And
so what's the goal? Because my understanding was that they were charged $1 a year, and but they had the responsibility of the maintenance of the course, or that's maybe what the old contracts were.
Right.
What was the dissatisfaction? Was it the revenue being generated from the course, or was it the condition of the facility?
Well, and certainly condition has been an issue over the years. We've had a lot of lost play from flooding, but
well, you know, it's Old Bay, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've had a number of conversations with Bob Barnum. I've got a pretty good understanding now of the history of Fred Lundblade and and the old dairy farm. So
okay.
I can pretty well picture that even, and so it's been a great asset. But as the creek through there has sedimentation over the years, we finally, as part of another grant, got approval to go in and do stream widening, but also then create resting ponds for salmon and things like that. So it ends up being a win-win project from an environmental standpoint and decreasing flooding. So the course in the future will be much more playable than, say, what it has been the last 5 years. Wanted to hit on we did a quick report to council last meeting on grants, and in the last 2.5 years, we've taken in nearly $27 million in federal state grants, county grants, Humboldt Area Foundation, certainly federal and state, the big bulk of that, nearly $27 million.
An impressive figure, kind of a frightening figure that so much of the city's budget is predicated on grant.
Right. And in a sense, you know, you want to be able to run your services with your own resources, but these are very important dollars.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
See everybody tomorrow.